Directions Media. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, February 19th, 2008. Each week, this podcast looks at timely topics of interest to the geospatial community. This is Adina Schutzberg of Directions Media, and I'm joined by my colleague, Joe Francica. Today, we'll look at two studies and their resulting maps and how they have and haven't made the news this week. One charts human impact on the world's oceans, the other, social vulnerability to disaster. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Attend the 2008 Developer Summit in Palm Springs, California, March 17th through the 20th. Meet one-on-one with ESRI developers, network with other GIS professionals, and exchange ideas on GIS development and design. To register, visit www.esri.com/devsummit.
Now, there were two maps that came out this week that I ran across, and I found it very interesting that the way the stories were covered was just completely different. And I think both are newsworthy, and I want to ask the question, why was the response so different? So let's start with the World Oceans map that was published in Science, the February 15th issue of Science. The corresponding information was announced at a meeting of the AAAS here in Boston day before. It's a map that shows the oceans, which cover, of course, 70% of the Earth's surface, and notes that less than 4% of the oceans remain unaffected by human activity, and more than a third are suffering from serious human impacts. And the research was done by Ben Halpern at the University of California, Santa Barbara's National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis. That's actually funded by NSF, and an international team of colleagues. And they looked at 17 ways that humans affect the oceans and then mapped each of them sort of with layers. And from the abstract, I will quote, "We developed an ecosystem-specific multi-scale spatial model to synthesize 17 global data sets of anthropogenic drivers of ecological change for 20 marine ecosystems," unquote. So this is a pretty technical article. In fact, if you go to Science, unless you've paid the money, you can't actually read the article. The other things to note, just in terms of the map itself, most impacted areas are areas adjacent to cities on the coast of the North Sea, the Mediterranean, Persian Gulf, South China Sea, and the coast of North America. There's a couple of points I want to make about this map and sort of the coverage of it. First off, one of the truly interesting things about the map is, unlike most other maps where the land is interesting and the water is sort of blank or just blue, on this map, the land is blank and the interesting part is everything else. So it has a very different look to it, and it took me a minute to get my bearings. It runs from light green down to red, light green being less impact, the red being the most impact. In the same issue of Science, there's an article that you also can't read unless you've paid the money, titled, U.S. Prepares to Launch Flawed Satellite. And the tease is, the U.S. government is planning to fly an Earth-observing satellite that will be essentially colorblind, at least as far as the oceans are concerned, which was just bizarre that that would be in the same issue. Now, let me get to the main meat of this, and that's where this story about this map was picked up. I did some quick searching, and I found 57 unique discussions of this research and this map. And that includes everything from Bloomberg News to technology blogs like on ZDNet. National Geographic covered it. The AP covered it, which meant it went out to all of its organizations. NOAA covered it. MSNBC did a really terrific job. And so the question I want to ask is, why was this such a big hit? And I do have to note that NSF put out a press release about the map, which included a graphic of the map, and that led to the fact that almost all of this coverage included a copy of the map, at least in the online coverage. And I should also point out that NPR covered that the story, which is, I think, the first place that I heard about it. So why are we excited about this particular research, Joe? Why is this getting such great coverage?
I think the key element here is we have a heightened awareness of global climate change. And what this map is indicating is the human influence on a very specific part of our environment that may be under stress, and that is the world oceans. So I think any article that is now appearing out there that has an indication that humans are impacting the environment, in particular something as important as ocean environment and ocean ecosystems, is being severely impacted by all of these human factors. And it would be interesting to find out what exactly were in the model, because it's not a big surprise that the areas where there's heaviest human concentration would be those areas where there is the greatest impact. So from a geospatial standpoint, it's not a big surprise. From the areas where, from the elements that are contributing to the model, yes, I'd like to know more about them. But I think the impact, because of the global climate change issue.
Maybe I'm putting too fine a point on it, but I think part of the reason the story was so interesting was there was a whole story of the model and how they collected the data, and it's been this map has been 4 years in the making. There's that whole side of it. But the bottom line is there's a map, and you can look at it, and it's got hotspots on it. And that gets an immediate response. And I think that's part of why this was sort of a top-notch news story, a new science news story to cover, with the fact that there was this product that everybody could immediately interact with. Now, to your point about details of the models and so forth, one of the things that was interesting to me in trying to scan through all this different coverage was I had those same kinds of questions. Where is the background, especially for those of us who can't access the actual science article? And the answer is there is a website that's part of UCSB for what is sometimes referred to as this Atlas of the Oceans, and it includes all kinds of supporting material, including detail of the model and KML of the actual data. The only place I found reference to that site was at MSNBC, which I thought was just interesting. And maybe they were tied into it because it had that sort of visualization of it. It was like a movie. And I think you're right. I think we're anything related to global change and the human impact on any kind of global change, whether it's global warming or in this particular case specifically about the oceans, just sort of fires up the imagination. We're ready to take that on. We're already starting to think about how we're going to react to it, both from a policy standpoint and from an individual standpoint. So it's almost like all the stars are aligned for us to reach out and grab information about this and then try to use it.
There's also a cautionary note that we ought to make, which is, this is the reason why I want to see the research, which is, do we look at this as a de facto representation of our human impact? Are there too many broad sweeping generalizations in this map? We're well aware that the visualization aspect of it is quite compelling because the map itself shows at least a medium to high impact over the majority of the ocean surfaces. And that causes us alarm. Why is there such a high impact? But I have a problem with broad sweeping generalizations, which is I want to know what the reason was for that high impact. And I think as geospatial professionals, we have to be prepared to explain what the spatial context is and are there any spatial relationships that we can glean from this impact.
Right. And to be fair, Mr. Halpern and the others involved with it said that getting the data was really very difficult. His suggestion is that this data is actually very conservative. In some cases, if I remember correctly from the NPR coverage, they actually gleaned expert opinion about impact as opposed to getting sort of hard data. So you're right, you do need to go back to the model and then go back to the data. Now, I want to contrast the reaction to that article and that map with another article with another series of maps in this case. And this sort of broke just a few days earlier on February 11th. And it was an article published online in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And the article was titled, Temporal and Spatial Changes in Social Vulnerability to Natural Hazards. The article is actually by Susan Cutter and Christina Finch from the University of South Carolina. Those involved in geography probably have heard of Susan Cutter. She's been around. It's certainly a name I know. This is a very different, this is much more of a human geography kind of story. And just to set the stage, let me just pull some key points from the abstract, and I'm quoting here. The concept of social vulnerability identifies sensitive populations that may be less likely to respond to, cope with, and recover from natural disaster. This paper presents empirical evidence on the spatial and temporal patterns in social vulnerability in the United States from 1960 to the present, using counties as our study unit, we found that those components that consistently increase social vulnerability for all time periods were density, race, ethnicity, and economic status. The national trend shows a steady reduction in social vulnerability, but there is considerable regional variability, with many counties increasing in social vulnerability during the past 5 decades, unquote. So this is basically a map of how bad it's going to be if there's a natural disaster in different areas of the United States, which sounds incredibly valuable, incredibly scary, certainly in the wake of the natural disasters we've had in the last couple of years. Also came out online. You also cannot get to the article directly unless you have a paid membership. How many references did I find to this article? I found exactly 2 online. Interestingly, the first one that I came upon was from New Scientist, which is actually a publication out of the UK. And the second was National Geographic. And I really have to praise National Geographic here because it went through some of the interpretation and the description of the patterns in the different maps. And that's really what geographers do. So that was really terrific. But I was sort of amazed and surprised and shocked and disappointed all at the same time that I didn't see any other coverage. I didn't hear about this on NPR. I didn't see the map everywhere. There was sort of no reaction to this. Now, are you surprised or can you explain this to me?
I think that the maps, as I'm looking at them, and we probably should explain them a little bit for the listeners, again, at the county level, there doesn't seem to be any immediate spatial consistency. In other words, if I looked at the map, I'm looking and trying to interpret what the spatial relationships are. The thing that jumps out from the abstract that you mentioned was the density. In the areas that are most vulnerable, there isn't a lot of population density, and perhaps interpreted that way, you could say that while there's not a lot of people here, we're not that interested. So that could be one interpretation why I didn't get a lot of coverage. And I just think it's a difficult series of maps to interpret just from the layman's perspective. That could be one reason that it's so scattered, there is not any consistent information that I could glean.
That's true. And in contrast to the World Oceans map, which, as you pointed out, is pretty much where there's lots of population, there's lots of impact. You can summarize it quite simply, and most people who have a sense of where the population is across the world would make that connection.
Well, and the other interesting thing that the abstract points out, these are areas that are going to that have the most impact from a vulnerability point of view. Well, if the impact is only to these less populated areas, we then naturally think that, well, there's not much you can do. There's not going to be a great deal of population that's affected. Or, alternatively, there is a low income status associated with these areas, which, from a policy standpoint, doesn't get the attention of many legislatures, unfortunately. It's a reality that we sometimes have to deal with.
I think it's worth noting, too, that this, unlike the World Oceans map, which is claimed to be the first of its kind, the research related to this topic of social vulnerability is something that Susan Cutter and others have been looking at for some time. In fact, she was a consultant to a study funded by DHS to look at places vulnerable to terrorist attack. And I found a reference to that, interestingly, just in the last couple of weeks in a paper in Arizona. This isn't a shiny new kind of project. It's something she's been involved with for some time. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. If it was the first time, maybe there was a bigger buzz when that sort of research was first done. The other thing that I think was disappointing to me was, you know, even if this was a new way of looking at it, but it isn't really the first time, that there was no press release on this put out by the publication, by the university, by a geographic professional organization. So it didn't sort of get that extra poke, I think, that the World Oceans map did by getting a formal press release, in this case from the National Science Foundation. Perhaps that would have helped.
Well, but so we got to ask the question from a policy-making standpoint or from a strictly a political standpoint, who is going to take action on this information? I think the information is so widely scattered. Is a presidential candidate going to react to this? Is there going to be some major policy initiatives that are going to react? I think for anybody looking at these maps, I go back to the point where it's difficult to interpret what exactly it is I'm trying to glean.
So basically you're saying it's politically difficult to react to this map.
Yeah, I think it is.
Now, what does that say about the nature of the World Oceans map? It would seem to me it would be politically more complicated to deal with that.
But let's go back to the standpoint that global climate change, and we key on the word global here, gets people excited. And we can see immediately where the impact is and make some judgment. Because spatially it makes sense, right? I mean, the impact was in the high population areas. This series of maps, it's difficult to make some logical association either with population or socioeconomic status. I can see by that oceans map where there's impact. Now, from a policy standpoint, it's almost country-wide. It's country basis. You know, some large political figure is going to have to react to that here. On a county-by-county basis, it's hard to get that policy-making, decision-making process into action, I think.
Said another way, this is a much more difficult topic in terms of the spatial distribution, for one. And for two, any time we have to deal with anything that's difficult, like urban-rural issues, race and ethnicity, socioeconomic status, everybody kind of freezes up because it's so hard and, you know, so contentious. And there's all kinds of potential of misstating and misrepresenting. And so, yes, it certainly weaves in a whole another level of complexity than something, I'll put this in quotes, relatively simple, like a physical situation in the oceans.
Yeah, that's a good point. And as you can see by the maps, by the Qatar article, you're crossing a lot of different political boundaries here. So that impetus to make some rational political policy statement is going to be more difficult.
So I guess the bottom line is if you want to get some buzz in the media these days, you want a global map related to some kind of physical geography situation perhaps, and the more complex and potentially more difficult to deal with at so many levels sort of human geographic situation. Well, that's all the time we have. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that GITA 2008 will be held in Seattle, Washington, March 9th through the 12th. You're invited to visit the ESRI booth, number 609, to see ESRI's latest solutions for geospatial professionals. For more information, visit www.esri.com/directionsmag. If you'd like to email us about this podcast or anything else, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next week, and be sure to tell a friend.